and welcome to The Two Tones, Tony DeBolfo, Tony Moclair. It is episode Glen Manton Tone.
Or save your balance if you want to go back a bit further, Tony. 22? I'll stick my neck out. 22,
can
the great man.
Can you give us any more 22s, Tone?
Neil Chandler wore 22 and played, what, I don't know if he played 50 games, but three of them were premierships, 68, 70 and 72. So
he was a great author as well.
A great author he was too. But Soapy Valance, one of the great men, told a great yarn not long before he died about an old teammate, Jack Kikakani, a little rover that was a specialist in the stab pass, Tony.
Yeah.
And he said, one day I led out to Jack and I took the mark on the chest and I looked down, there was blood streaming down the middle of my sternum. And I went up to Jack and I said, Jack, how many times do I have to tell you, lace out when you kick it to me, lace out. I don't know that Jack ever learned his lesson, but there you go.
Wow. Well, we got something of a lesson against Collingwood. You wouldn't say they exactly took us to the schoolhouse, Tone?
Not to the sword. Probably could have put us to the sword earlier in the game, missed a few chances. And then when you look at the scoreline, it probably best reflects, you know, the dour, you know, clash that this was, Tony, and how it was a battle of defences, that you really had the backs of both sides on top. I think where Carlton lost was that their midfield was pretty much kept in check. Plus, there was the butchering of the ball and in field play. And I don't really think the forwards got a real crack at it. Not that too many of them were really presenting either. It was a disappointing evening all round, really. And reflecting on the match itself, two goals in the finish, I was a little surprised we got that close, to be truthful. But there you go. It was an eminently forgettable contest, I would have thought.
Penderbury had a great night. And congratulations to Collingwood. That goal from the forward pocket was astonishing.
Look, he was a standout on the field quite clearly. And I think I mentioned off air, Tony, that, you know, when thoughts turn to the previous encounter, Mark Murphy was up and running, and I think, you know, one number down there in midfield really hurt us, because in the previous encounter, I'm pretty sure Ed Curnow went to Pendlebury and completely shut him down.
Yeah.
In this instance, with Murphy out, you had Curnow going to Treloar and doing a great job in negating Treloar, but what that did was free up Pendlebury to become Collingwood's most efficient contributor. So weight of numbers probably took its toll there, and I guess with every week we just get to see how important the presence and leadership of Mark Murphy actually is. We sorely miss him.
Well, we are burying the headline a bit there, Tone. It was, of course, the debut of Jack Silvani. I saw him walk past me on the way in today. He's how tall is he? He'd be 6'4" in the old scale, or 6'3"?
Yeah, well, I don't know that he's that tall. He may be 191, Danielle's 191. Just reminded me, which, again, for elders, it's sort of like a hieroglyphic, isn't it? 191 in the Imperial would be what, 6? Yeah, maybe 6'2", 6'3"?
I think 6'4".
Is it 6'4"?
I reckon.
Look, he's quite athletic. Like, I mean, if you know, comparisons were drawn with Jack and Stephen running out for his first game, you know, the sinewy figure in the frame.
Yeah.
No mistaking the gait of Jack
Silvani. Yes, that's the Silvani trademark.
And, of course, the long sleeves and the socks down. I mean, all it was missing was number one on the back. But it was magnificent to see. And, in fact, so romantic was his story. You know, the three paternal generations happened 6 times previously ever in football. You know,
really?
The Kennedys have done it, and Laurie Dwyer's family, Francis Burke's family. There's only a handful. We've had grandfather, father, son of the same paternal lineage play for the one team.
You've had four
or five generations of players who've, through the generation, played different clubs, but this is the one line through the one club. And it was just magnificent to see the romance in football on display through Jack Silvani. And in fact, standing on the concourse at the MCG, there was a Collingwood fellow next to me who mentioned, I've actually come here tonight to see Jack Silvani play. So I think that's a measure. I think that's a measure of the interest that Jack Silvani brought to the game. And of course, for those watching on, you know, like Serge and Rita,
it was
magnificent. And Joe Silvani, of course, and then Stephen having kittens in the box on his own, you know, with every time Jack went near the ball. Tell you a funny story, Tony. After the game, Rita and Serge and Joe were down in the rooms, obviously, and I went over to Rita and I said, well, Rita, you've sat in the stands for years to see your husband Serge play. You saw your boy Surge play. This is the walk in the park for you, isn't it? Yeah. With Jack, and he's gone. She said, "Oh, here we go again." It's 50 or 60 years from dedication, you know, and you feel for family, you know. You must ride every bump and every tackle and every mark and kick taken along the way, you know, heart in your mouth, thinking, "Will he get hurt? Will he come out unscathed?" It must be a particularly traumatic experience, particularly when you're your next of kin or next one down is out there for the first time.
Well, there were some deft touches from the young fella. There was a lot of unselfish play.
Yes, great team play by Jack. Very creative, knew how to make position, clear thinker. In actual fact, got in the game pretty much straight away.
Yeah,
he took one over the top from Daisy Thomas, which he flipped across to Jed Land for Carlton's first goal.
And lovely kick by Jed Land,
lovely kick too. And it was a great nerve steadier for Jack, and he just seemed to, you know, find his feet with every minute that passed in the game. Survived the argy-bargy at the start with Tyson Goldsack, but that was to be expected. You know, welcome to AFL football, son. And he really was at home. It was a shame he didn't slot that goal, to the Street end.
To Bryce Gibbs.
That's right, the one off to Bryce. It was a crowd killer, that one. There was a lot of people wanting to go back and slot that. But look, all in all, that was the diamond in the dirt on Saturday night, to see Jack Silvani, you know, turn out for his first game and get through unscathed. And I must say, I had the great pleasure to interview Jack after the game, and he does carry himself so well.
Yeah, he does. It was a lovely interview, Tony.
He was terrific.
How do I put this? He's a well-raised young man.
Yes, yes. And look, I think
he's from a good family.
Good stock, Tony. Good stock. No, it was lovely to see, and may there be many, many more games for the Carlton Football Club for Jack, that's for sure.
Well, we hope he might get to the Magic 200, as Andrew Walker did, speaking of the number one Guernsey.
Well, it was, you know, the 200th game was somewhat overshadowed, was it? But it was no less a milestone, a particularly significant milestone when you think first Indigenous player can't play 200 games. You know, Sid Jackson didn't make it, Eddie Betts didn't make it, here's Walker on the mantle, you know, having played 200 for the club, and it didn't mean a lot to him and his family. His grandfather, who I think he mentioned was 88, was in the rooms, was there for his first 50th, 100, 150th games also. And he talked afterwards about, you know, how his career had come and gone in a blink. I think we all remember that game in 2004 against West Coast here where, you know, he burst on the scene, you know, dropped the car, probably with one of his early leaps in footy. You know, it was an amazing debut on that particular instance. And I'm pretty sure Andrew Walker was also the last man, is the last man to kick a goal here at Prince's Park in a game of football.
Wow.
So he carries that that honour with him to the grave, probably. It was interesting because you had Walker at one, Jack Silvani at locker number two.
Mm-hmm.
And so Walker said, look, Jack's a very level-headed fellow and didn't really need to impart too much of my wisdom on him through the course of the week leading into game number one. He said he had it pretty well covered. And as Jack mentioned before the game, he kept his nerves pretty much in check. And part of preparation for Jack was to actually lodge his first vote, the federal election, which he said actually was a good thing, was it took his mind off it. Probably took 3 hours off his prep time too, filling out the white paper. Totally. Yeah.
Are you even allowed a sausage on game day?
Oh, that's a great question. That is it. Can I get back to
about
all that?
The fat content and conditioning and that sort of stuff.
Only gourmet sausages where he votes.
Oh, yeah, that's, I could imagine. Yes, of course. Yeah. We're not talking... struggle straight. Now, Walks had some moral support in the room. An ex-Collingwood player and a Carlton great clubman and champion was there to provide some moral support on the night.
Yes, he was indeed. We talked about the old number 29, Tony, Heath Scotland, the great Heath Scotland. And remind me to get back to you about the number 29 too, and a former player, Tony. But Heath was in the rooms, as was another former Carlton and Collingwood player wearing who wore the number 2 of Jack Silvani, Jordan Russell.
Jordan Russell, of course.
Jordan Russell was there, and I saw Davey Ellard in the room as well, and also Luke Livingston made a
great
cameo.
Number 4.
The great number 4 was there. I bumped into Jordan Russell outside the the room afterwards, heading off to the Hilton Inn, and I said, "Oh, Jordan, foot in both camps tonight with Carlton Collie." He said, "Rubbish, he's Carlton through and through." So, Geordie's still got blue blood beating through his veins, but all of them were there in support of Andrew Walker. And Walker said to me, he said, "These were fellows that meant a lot to me through my time playing." Mm. And when it's all said and done in football and a lot of areas of professional life, Tony, it all comes down to the friendships.
Yes.
It all boils down to friendships you make. And when I spoke to Andrew Walker about that, I think that's what he reflected on, the people that he met that have come and gone, been through the door, because 200 games is, you know, 10 years plus. And in football terms, that's a long time. And a lot of people come and go. So them being there meant a lot to him. And it was great to see them in the room.
You're right. You did make that point about Scotto taking him under his wing when he got to the club. And, and him being, I guess, a mentor and a friend and a guide around the club, if you want to put it that way, which is just sums up what a great clubman Heath Scotland was.
Very true. Very true. And is, indeed.
Kieran Byrne, that was a nasty injury. He got crunched by two Collingwood players.
He did. And you know, look, in a lot of these cases, you know, it often seems so innocuous. You see something happen like that and you think, oh, he'll get up from that and just walk away. And, of course, he went down and never moved. And, and knew straight away, too, that, you know, it must be the most sickening feeling, notwithstanding the absolute physical agony, but the mental realisation that this is it and it's probably 12 months. And, you know, we lacked a lot of run. The team was a bit one-paced the other night. And so players like Kieran Byrne are players we can ill afford to lose because he's a player that is capable of running the lines.
Yeah.
And it was just so disappointing. Fellow that's making real progress. And I can remember Brendan Bolton saying early year about Kieran Byrne, "I think we might have a player here." That was how he rated Kieran. And of course, I saw Zach Tui, his fellow countrymen, mentioned at the weekend that Kieran has age on his side, you know, to get over this. It's probably going to be the best part of 12 months. I suppose the good thing is, what are we in July? So we're going to see him, you know, at some point next year, fingers crossed. It's not a complete 2017 wiped out.
Mm.
But I think a player of his quality and worth and run is something, someone, or something we sorely need, you know. And let's hope recovery is speedy. I did hear or read a couple of comments where he said, look, he's getting his mind around it now, and that's probably half the battle.
Yeah.
But we definitely want him to make a complete, successful and full recovery, because he's a player that Carlton really needs to be quite literally up and running.
Well, how do you fill that hole?
Well, it's a good question, Tony. And I suppose, you know, there's always a lot to play for. I bumped into Andrew Gallucci coming in here this morning, and he's getting over that shoulder injury, and you know, he's saying how much there is to play for players that probably we're yet to have a look at, that are in a position, if they display form in the lower grades, are actually more than likely going to get a call up, because I think what we have now is, in the last 7 or 8 games, got an opportunity to see the future of Carlton, you know. And like, hopefully Charlie Curnow won't be too far away. You know, Mackay's trying to get games into his legs.
Sorry, Tom. Charlie Curnow, he's got glandular fever. He's got the HSC illness, or the VCE. How's he coming on?
Well, he's back. He's back up and running.
Ah.
And I think I read that where he was quite upbeat about getting through.
Ah.
And so he's now back in the system. Been a tough year for him, obviously, with ill health. He's just had glandular fever. Mackay, I think, had a minor setback, didn't play most recently, having had one game back after injury. But again, these are players that I think Brendan Bolton and the coaching staff would be desperate to see get games under their belt. So I think, you know, in answer to your question with the loss of Kieran Byrne, not right now, as we speak, I don't have anyone in mind that I could throw at you in terms of name-wise. There's probably someone there. I just haven't had a chance to think about it. But I suspect there'll be opportunities for you know, a number of players, should they display the form that warrants their senior selection, because there'll be no armchair rides given. They'll have to perform.
No, and the great man Brendan Bolton has been consistent about that.
Yes.
There's, as you said, nobody's going to be basically gifted a spot in the seniors.
Yeah. Very true.
Tone, I'm going to ask you for your 3-2-1s.
3-2-1s, Tone. Look, I acknowledged Ed Curnow earlier, and I'm going to do it again. I thought his negating game on Treloar for Collingwood was terrific. It couldn't have done more to curb Treloar's influence, and he's a good player for Collingwood. So I gave Ed one vote. Then I had to go to the Lion Hearts, as I've done so often this year, the fellows that flew the flag for us in the back half. And with all due respect to Sam Rowe, I thought he played pretty well, actually, also. But I went with Sam Doherty, two votes. Yep. Stellar year and pushing on for All-Australian selection. And the little big man, Simo, just going from strength to strength. What a year he's having.
Extraordinary.
Extraordinary year. And again, just, was there when Carlton so desperately need him, as he has been for so many games throughout his long and illustrious career.
It is. It's been a red letter year.
It has indeed. Play. It has indeed. You know, and you look back, one of the success stories. I mean, you think about Doherty and Simpson. I mean, they're going to be up there in the BNF, aren't they? They've been tremendous, and all power to Simo. You know, he as you said, Tony, he's lifted his game to another level, and at what is he, 30-plus years, it shows no signs of abating, and all power to him. You know, he's going to give 300 a one hell of a shake, I reckon.
Oh, I certainly hope so, and then maybe he can lead the country after that. I'd certainly vote for him.
Have we got a leader, Tone? Have we actually got one yet?
Oh, no, no. We'll get back to you. Watch this space. We're only a first-world democracy. There's no rush. I want to talk to you about Wright's game.
Yes.
He did some very nice things. His goal-kicking is very composed in front of goal with a set shot.
I agree with you, Tony. And look, I think the inclusion of Matthew Wright to the Carlton dynamic is actually a tribute to Stephen Silvani's vision. I give him credit for getting a hard nut like Wright in from Adelaide, and plus Sumner and Lamb and all those other players that, you know, Phillips, that have come in and brought another dimension to the team. And I think what a player like Wright and co bring to Carlton is that a little bit of steel to around the contests, you know, which I think we really needed. You know, Mark Murphy, I've always thought, as brave as he is, needed the support in numbers around him. And I think that's what players like Matthew Wright do bring to the table. Wright's a smart player. He can assess a situation pretty quickly. He makes the right decisions, nine times out of ten. And I think, his experience to the team has also proved invaluable to Carlton as a whole. So, yes, I think a heady player, you know, one that doesn't get too flustered or overcome by the situation, experienced player, good decision maker, And a goal kicker. You know, I might say, Tony, that the with Murphy out of the team, we'll speak about Murphy in a moment. I think the other player we so desperately missed at the moment, when I told you about how I felt we were a bit one-paced, was Dennis Armfield.
Armfield
this year, I think, is another one of those players that's come on. And what I think Dennis Armfield has done is become a more dangerous player because of his improved field kicking.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a goal kicker that we miss who actually breaks the lines. And,
yes.
And I think his run was what we also missed the other night. And again, like Murph, he's still a little while away. I understand Murph's probably another one or two away, which it's hard to believe when you think back to that game against Geelong, you know, that innocuous incident with Dangerfield. You think, he might actually hobble back on in the second half of the game, and we haven't seen him for weeks. And it's obviously of great frustration to Mark that he can't get over this particular ankle injury. And Dennis has had a sort of an eye-watering ailment, the groin area, we'll say.
Overuse?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and unfortunately, we haven't seen him for the past fortnight or so, and we miss him. He's brought a lot to the table this year at Carlton, and I think his improved goal kicking means he's a far more dangerous player than he probably ever has been at any stage of his career.
And also, you look at the calibre of a player he would draw from the opposition too, because he is He's electric. His pace is electrifying. And,
well, that's true. And if you go back to the game on Saturday night, Tony, what we weren't able to do was find space into the 50 or hit a target or run the line. And Armfield's one of those players that's capable of getting the ball inside 50 and finishing off. Mm. We just didn't have that sort of player on Saturday night. And we need them. We need them all, Tony. I think what we're seeing right now is Carlton's depth being sorely tested. But all that does is place a requirement on every other player to lift a notch. And this is a real test for the players and for Brendan Bolton. You know, can they get up for Adelaide? Tough gig, the MCG, that's for sure. But no greater test.
No, like you say, Tone. Just to cover off Murph, we reckon 1 or 2 weeks.
Looks that way, Tony. Just can't seem to shrug it at the moment. As I said, it's a cause of enormous frustration for him, I'm sure, and for supporters who are watching on. We need him back as quickly as possible, that's
we
for sure.
We sure do. Well, Carlton v Adelaide, we're talking Matthew Wright, his old club. Sunday, 10th of July, MCG 1:10 PM. It's Multicultural Round. Multicultural greats at the Carlton Football Club. Who would you say?
Silvani's obviously. Silvani's the one. But then, I suppose you think back to Milam Hanna, who was born in Lebanon, can still remember the smells of Lebanon, which you'll rediscover them if you're fortunate enough to be invited to Mrs. Hanna's house.
You've been there?
No, I haven't. I've been told this third hand. But blokes like Ange Christou, who I think rang the bell at the weekend, they used to live around there. They'd come into training, and Kuda was another one. They'd go to Mrs. Hanna's for lunch, and she'd have a feast ready for them. You know, you talk about other players. I think Michael Sexton was born in Lae, I think, in New Guinea.
Oh, yeah.
So there's different players that have been, born. Wayne Blackwell was born in London or in England, I think.
Yeah.
We've had an enormous multicultural...
Rowan Welsh.
Rowan Welsh.
From East Scotland. we could go on.
You could go on.
Yeah,
you could go
but
on.
We won't.
No. But you're right. Multicultural round's a big round for the club. And you know, Lygon Street and Carlton are inextricably linked. And, you know, you won't probably get a more multicultural precinct than Lygon Street from East Brunswick through to Carlton.
Not only that, but the wonderful, you know, Jewish support for the Carlton Football Club over the years, which
absolutely
has been magnificent.
Yeah, we're here in the early days of Carlton, you know, the Smorgon family's presence and an enormous Jewish enclave in the old days of Carlton before the Italians got here.
Yeah.
So you're right, it's what's the word, steeped in history?
Totally. Now, Adelaide... Look, it's not going to be an easy game. We shan't kid ourselves.
No,
but it has been a great year so far, and I say compared to last year where there was a sense of hopelessness almost after a loss. This year, I just feel like a loss just washes off me, and I just think. Because everything is just building towards something better that will happen next year or in the future.
Well, I think so. I think the future's bright and we are all pushing forward. I just hope our depth can, our issue with depth won't really bite this week. Adelaide's obviously pressing for, a premiership.
Mm.
They took a little while to shrug Melbourne off at the weekend but did what they had to do. We've all heard about the potency of their forward setup, and they're pretty even. They look pretty even and a very good team. So Carlton's work will be cut out. But in saying that, Brendan Bolton, I'm sure we put into the players that, what we need this time of year is a follow-on from what we were displaying earlier in the year.
Yeah.
It is a long season, but the challenge is to the players now to try and... regain the sort of form that was shown earlier in the year and bring it to the MCG in spades for the match with the Crows, because that's Adelaide on the MCG is a formidable foe, and of course Adelaide will be there when the whips are cracking in September.
Mm.
So they'll be taking any game of the MCG as a pretty serious dress rehearsal. So yes, the challenge is there for all at Carlton this week. Let's see how the players one and all meet that challenge, Tony. It'll be very interesting.
And hopefully game number two for Jack Silvani.
Oh, number two for Jack Silvani. I don't think he's done too much to hurt his chances of selection for game number two. I'll be looking forward to seeing him out there. He's exciting to watch and Long may he reign.
Exactly. If you want to see the next generation coming through, the Northern Blues take on Geelong at Icon Park this Saturday at 2 p.m.
Just, I mentioned earlier, Tony, number 29 of Heath Scotland. It was a number worn by the former Carlton Premiership player of 1947, the late Alan Greenshields, who died last week. Oh. I'm actually speaking at his funeral on Thursday, Tony, talking a little bit about his life and times at Carlton. Interestingly, he was 20th man in the 1947 grand final and never got a run. He sat on the bench for the entire game, and he told this great story. Of course, 47, Fred Stafford, the premiership hero, kicked a goal to give Carlton a one-point victory over Essendon.
Oh, excellent.
In the dying seconds of that game, the last 20 seconds. Yep. Can you imagine if he did it today, he'd be keys to Carlton. But Greenshields told this story that Stafford had not had a kick all game, and he said he was sitting on the bench up from the advisers and the coach, Purse Bentley, and he could hear the assistant coaches saying to Purse, "You've got to get Stafford off and get young Greenshields on."
Yeah.
And Bentley would say, "Yeah, just wait a few minutes, just wait a few minutes." It got down to the last 20 seconds, and Stafford, who hadn't had a kick all day, becomes a hero with that goal. He kicks the goal from a bounce in the forward pocket, puts Carlton point in front. The ball goes back to the centre, is bounced, and the final siren goes.
Oh.
And I remember saying to Alan, I said, "Do you often wonder what might have been with the 47 grand final?" And he said, "Not a day has gone by that I haven't thought about it." And I worked it out, Tony, in terms of days since 47 when I spoke to Alan Greenshield. It's something like 25,000 days. He was a lovely man. He followed Carlton until the end. He later went to St Kilda. His early career was interrupted by wartime.
Yep.
He was one of those men of the 40s, men of stature that, you know, saw a lot and lived through a lot and came back probably.
Plus a childhood through the Depression as well, you'd
correct,
imagine.
Correct. But a lovely man. He was 90, and his passing means that Ken Hands is the last man standing from both the 45 bloodbath and the 47 grand final. Hands is the last link with that great era of Carlton history.
Oh, well, be careful with that man. He's an antique. This has been The Two Tones, episode 22. Tony Moclair and Tony DeVolfo saying go Blues, and we will catch you next week.